This is the Penalty Office Music Business 101 podcast series. I'm Neil Levine.
And I'm Warren Schatz.
We'll be having conversations about everything from old school music business to the current state of the business. Everything from hip hop to pop. We'll have lots of guests and go pretty deep.
Welcome to the Penalty Office podcast. We have Mr. Master Ace with us today, a legendary MC, artist, performer, producer, all these things. Have been in the game for a long time. So welcome, Ace.
Welcome, Ace.
Not as long as you, I don't think, right?
Well, not as long as me, and not nearly as long as Warren.
Right.
But still a long time, man, and staying relevant for all these years. So, you know, kind of why don't you kind of get us started with where you grew up and how you got into this game?
Oh, I grew up in Brownsville, Brooklyn, New York. I grew up in the projects. The name of my housing project was called Howard Houses. My family moved there in the 50s, right before I was born. I was born in 66. And then when they brought me home from the hospital, they brought me home to the housing projects. That's where my roots were laid. Now, how I got into the game was, you know, obviously many years later, but I had just graduated from college. The same year that I graduated from college, I was already, the previous two summers, I was sort of loosely working with Marley Marl as a result of winning a rap contest my sophomore year in college. I had been working on demos for a couple of years, and that same year, well, actually the year before, 87, he told me he was putting out an album and he wanted me to be on the album. He was going to feature two of the songs that we had worked on. So I was kind of fortunate in that somebody who was already entrenched in the game and had a name saw me worthy to be sort of ushered into the game through his compilation album, and that's how people first heard of me.
What was the first song you had released?
The first song that people heard me on was The Symphony, which was the posse cut and the final song that was recorded for that album. I was on the song featured with Big Daddy Kane, Kool G Rap, and Craig G, and I, by chance, happened to end up on that song, really by just a matter of just good fortune, that I ended up on that song, right place, right time, because there was no plan for me to be on the song. I was just happened to be at the studio when they were recording. I wanted to just kind of peek in on the process. And when it came time for somebody to rap first, they all passed the buck to each other and nobody wanted to start it off. They all wanted to wait and see what everybody else was going to rap. Probably just, you know, a little strategic positioning, trying to, okay, maybe if I can hear what he's going to say before I go in there, if I need to change a couple of lines. I don't know what the real reasons were, but I know back then it was more appealing to rap last on a song as opposed to rapping first. And so Marley gave me the opportunity to just kind of warm up everybody and get on and rap first. So I went in and spit one of my memorized rhymes, and then everything else followed suit. Everybody else went, and they decided to keep me on the song. And so there you have it.
I don't care who's first or who last, but I know that y'all just better rock this at the drop of a dime, baby. I don't know what y'all gonna do with this, but it got to be funky. It got to be funky if you're gonna be on it. I don't care who start, I don't care what y'all do, but you got to be finished before the music is through.
Listen closely, so your attention's undivided. Many in the past have tried to do what I did. Just the way I came off then, I'm gonna come off stronger and longer, even with the drum off. I'll keep on going and flowing just like a river. I got a whole lot to give, so I'ma give up. Little at a time, new trails are blazing. Action is in effect, it always stays in. Yeah, just like a shot from a cannon, I am the man in charge and I've been planning. A jam strong enough that it can lift your soul. I'm the originator and my rhymes are made of gold. Once you hear the capital A, rap it'll stay with you for a while. It won't go away unless you force it, because it stays with you, my friend. And if you force it away, I'ma hit you again. I project my voice so it's right in the crowd. There's a sign at the door, no biting allowed. And if you didn't read it, I suggest you do so, or you'll be stranded just like Caruso. Sleep if you wanna, go ahead, get some shut eye. A man broke his jaw trying to say what I say on the microphone. He should've left it alone, just for the record. Let it be known that my ego's only partially grown. And never would I ever condone fighting in any form. Yo, I'm only warm. That verse was the calm. Now here's the storm. Next up, yo, I believe that's me. Craig G, light up the mic for the symphony. The gym is dedicated to all unoptimistic.
How old were you?
I was like 21, fresh out of college.
That's great. Tell us about what happened next.
So that was 88, the year that that song was recorded. The video didn't drop till 89, top of 89, if I remember correctly. And then after the video dropped, people knew who I was. And I was associated with this label called Chilling Records that had already put out Big Daddy Kane. They had already put out Biz Markie, MC Shan, Roxanne Shanté, and Marley Marl. So now that there was some name recognition associated with me, I thought that it was like the natural progression was that I was going to be the next artist to come out on Cold Chilling Records. They didn't quite see it that way at first. And they decided to do a 12-inch on a label called Prism, which was their sort of offshoot label that they would do 12-inches on. They did the same thing with Kane. Kane had a Prism 12-inch first, and I think they used that Prism label to kind of test the ground first to see whether or not an artist would be viable to go forward with. So they want to see kind of what the sales are, what the response would be. So they did a single with me first. The A side was a song called Together, and the B side was a song called Letter to the Better. Lo and behold, to everybody's surprise, including mine, the B side, Letter to the Better, wound up exploding in the United Kingdom.
Once again, my friend, yo, it's Ace in action, here to send any and all MCs into a frenzy. Cause I'll take a rapper out just like a Benzie. Yeah, this ain't like the same old lame old bragging and nagging. Yo, all that became old years ago. And yo, here's a pro fashion that I am fresh in, and so I am going on and on like on a venture. Some of y'all are off from that because I sent ya. Let's move it forward. You like it if I pause? Yeah, you sure would. But I ain't pausing, no stop, just like a freeway. Rappers, you playing too close, I need some leeway. Cause it's about time for the party together. Little bit hype and yup, this is a letter to the better.
Letter.
A letter to the better.
Letter.
So go check the mail for yours, I unveil the jaws. Then I dog you, get down on all fours. So we can brawl, the capital A's a dream. Rhymes are fierce, pierce your ears like a laser beam. Reach, and I'll teach you each the speech. Like a spectrum, even if you add bleach. It won't fade or run, cause it's made of 100% knowledge to weigh a ton. Listen, bud, yo, your rhymes are dud. Pencil or pen and I'll draw blood. Take a strong stance, strictly long pants. No shorts taken when you hear my song dance. Cause you can't keep still, so dance till you drop. All the hip-hop stop, but it never will. Yeah, now if you're better, then here's the move. Ace in action, I'm here to show and prove. Plain and simple, pretend my rhymes are pimple. Now bust it, and watch it ache your temple. You need buffering, you're suffering, can you cope? Nah, nope, cause it's dope, and you hope. I might slip a trip, stall or fall, but all hope is lost and tossed. You've been hoarse, you're drugged, and you the bug. If I'd have set a brother line in this verse of my letter to the better. Yeah. My letter to the better.
It became a huge hit in London. Very well-known DJ there, Tim Westwood. He was one of the DJs that broke the song in London. And it wasn't really making noise in the States, but all of this groundswell in London sort of made Cold Chillin' feel like, okay, well, somebody's liking this kid, so we will go forward with the album. And I got my album deal somewhere around 89, and my first album dropped the following year, 1990.
I know in the early days, you had a couple of Billboard charted records. What were they?
So my first single off that first album was a song called Me and the Biz. That charted on Billboard. The next single, Music Man, also charted. I know Me and the Biz made it as high as top 10 on the rap chart. I never got into the top 5. So that was the early part of my career. And then subsequent albums, I always had a 12-inch that would chart, get somewhere up in the top 50 or somewhere like that. But it wasn't until I dropped a single in 1994 called Born to Roll where I started to really see some real position on the charts.
And the force is centrifugal. Can you find your way through the lyrics that be catching them? Throw another rhyme across the room, they be fetching them. Then they take a loss to the master. And I throw those crazy
crazy blows and they knows I be plastering all across the room, on the ceilings and the walls too. Punk little suckers didn't know I had the gall to come around they block with my cock diesel system and turn it up to 10 and then start to diss them. And they didn't want to battle if they did when they saw me. They'd have opened up their trunk, but they tried to ignore me. Hey little suckers, I know you hear me calling you, but you wanted some, but I see that you're all into frontin'. Ain't no future in your frontin', so let's get it on like Marvin Gaye. Take the cash and sit it on the hood of your wick whack, low riding Cadillac. Back up your boys and let's start the battle act. Like, you know, the master ace don't play when it comes to my bass.
Ah, check it out, baby, check it out, dog. Check it out, baby, check it out, dog. Check it out, baby, check it out, dog. Check it out, baby.
I was born wrong.
I never was big on statistics and memorizing where I was. Some people know exactly what position they topped at and all of that kind of stuff. I never looked at sales reports or anything. I said, let me know when I'm go gold. If I'm not gold, I don't want to even hear what. Don't tell me what I'm selling every week. I don't want to live and die with sales reports every single week. So I was just one of those artists that didn't care about those kind of numbers, and I was the same way with chart position. But you know, I had a few records that charted. Born to Roll was one. INC Ride was another one that charted. A song called Sitting on Chrome.
He be cruising, nigga be cruising.
Sitting on Chrome. Sitting on Chrome. Sitting on Chrome. Sitting on Chrome. Sitting on Chrome.
These are all different songs over the course of the early part of my career anyway that charted on Billboard.
So do you think that some of these early records that charted on Billboard is part of the reason why you're so successful in Europe now and still have a big career that people want to come see you because you're so well known?
Absolutely not. The European art audience could care less about what happens on Billboard. They really don't follow Billboard. It's not a thing in Europe. So they're not concerned with radio play or chart position or who's hot, quote unquote, and who's not. All they care about is the music and whether or not it's good to them. And so the reason that my popularity in Europe has been what it's been over the last 20 years is because I've continually dropped new music. And the music that I've dropped starting in 2001 was music that resonated with those fans over there. And some of those records were big, big records over there in terms of popularity, in terms of word of mouth. And so, you know, we did vinyl on all those records and the fans ate it up. And I started doing shows, more shows in Europe starting in 2000. And at that time, I was very determined to make sure that my stage show was one that people would go home and talk about. And so I found myself from 2000, really for the next 20 years, just trying to wow the crowd every single time I stepped on stage. And those are the reasons why my popularity has been what it's been in Europe, is because I've done a really good job on stage with our stage show. And I've always come different. Every couple of years, I change up the show. And I've always tried to give full energy on stage. And my show is always nice. And they like long shows, an hour plus. You know, a lot of U.S. artists come over, they do 25 minutes and they leave the stage. They do their three hits and then they leave the stage and the fans are booing because they want to hear album cuts. They want to hear the songs from early in their career. And a lot of artists don't understand that the European audience, they want a show. I understood that, and I delivered every single time. And because of that, I've been asked back to some cities as many as 8 times over the last 20 years, 10 times over the last 20 years, same venue sometimes, and the fans keep coming out. It's amazing.
Guys, do you hear that? Ace really built this touring base all over the world because he did great shows. He didn't just go in and do a couple songs. He really put together a really great comprehensive show. And I know you've also grown that to other markets around the world. When we were working together a few years ago, I know that South America was starting to open up for you and other territories all over the world. So it's really amazing to me that, you know, the U.S. market is a very fickle market, but there's a lot of places around the world that really care about their artists and really tied to it. And I think the artists that put the time in are the artists that are staying relevant today. And Ace, if I was wearing a hat, it would come off to you because you've really done your thing on the touring throughout the years. So, you know, it's not just about a hit record. It's about a really great show. And that's going to keep you out there. And you know, you've done a phenomenal job with that. I know you've also worked with really cool artists like MF Doom. So how did that project come about? And kind of, you know, that was a really different project. And I know really helped you with your international base, too.
Yeah, the Doom project came about because Doom had released a bunch of his instrumentals. I think really every beat that he ever did, he released them as a, I don't know how many CD collection, but it was 100 or 80 or something beats that he had done over the course of, you know, the previous 10 years. And they were all just instrumentals. And a friend of mine, I was riding with him and he's playing these instrumentals. And I'm like, yo, what's that? That sounds kind of dope. And he explained what it was. And I said, yo, I like some of these beats. And so he wound up bringing me a CD one day with like 40 of those beats on it. And I drove around with those beats for the next few months. And as I drove around, because I didn't really like listening to, you know, commercial radio. So I'll drive around, listen to beats or sports talk. So I'll play those beats, those Doom beats driving. And after a couple months of driving around with those beats playing in the background, I started getting ideas and songs and lyrics and lines started popping into my head. And I said, man, I should do a mix. I was kind of in between projects. You know, I said, maybe I'll do a mixtape where I just do 10 joints and I just rap to 10 of these beats and throw it out there for the fans just to kind of be a stopgap in between projects. And so I mentioned that to my partner, Filthy Rich. And at a meeting we had with Fat Beats, who was pressing up some of our other records, he happened to kind of mention that I was going to do this free mixtape and throw it out there for the fans over Doom Beats. And Fat Beats like, what? What do you mean free? No, we can sell that. And, you know, they actually stepped up and found a budget and gave us a budget to release it commercially. And then I turned it into a more meaningful project. It wasn't just throwaway rhymes. Now it became a concept album that I dedicated to the memory of my mother. And I kind of told the story of my younger years on the album. And the title track, Son of Yvonne, became kind of like my ode to my mom who had passed away in 2005. So what started off as just a basic idea for a mixtape turned into this great project that fans love. And I'm glad it turned out the way that it did.
At some point you had a kind of issue with the music business. You were unhappy with it. Can you talk about that? It's always good for people that listen to the show to see that there are also difficulties that we have.
So around the late 90s, I was working on an album for Big Beat Atlantic Records. I was in the studio working for about a year. I was there. I was in the studio like from 96, 97, right in there. And I put together a nice collection of songs. But the industry, or I should say the radio, was changing. It was kind of the very beginnings of the P. Diddy Bad Boy movement. You know, they were taking over the airwaves with these kind of R&B laden hip hop tracks that were working in the clubs and working on radio. And they had a lot, some of them had singing, and they were just a lot more melodic and not necessarily, you know, rooted in what we thought hip hop should sound like, but it was working. And they started throwing out hit records like crazy. And so Craig Kalman over at Big Beat kind of expressed that I needed to, for lack of a better term, chase kind of what those guys were doing. And it was my heart wasn't really in it to make that kind of music. But I made an attempt. I did a few records that I thought might fit in that space, but it wasn't the type of music that felt true to me. But I did a few records. I had a song called Cars. It came out on a black label. We threw it out as a black label on vinyl, pressed it up myself. But it was our way of kind of trying to get things heated up. We sampled a Houdini record for it, One Love. And it was actually a cool record. And I was just rapping about different cars and stuff. And, you know, that was kind of what was happening. Everybody was rapping about being flossy and fancy and cars and jewelry and popping bottles. And all of that stuff was part of what was going on lyrically at that time.
In the white Yukon with Dushan and Rob Mel, with the Carmel leather interior. We ain't hearing ya. The 410s and 215s sound clean by all means. Gotta keep it tight like jeans.
In the Dodge Viper, TVs up in the visor. Exhaust pipes spitting out fire. Low performance tires, squeezing on cats that wear wires. Say we ain't doing nothing, I say you lie.
In the red Nissan, with a diamond flooded piece on. Release on both sides of the car, now with the beast on. It's worthless, anytime they want, yo, they can earth us. They purpose, to harass us in the legal searches.
In the drop Lotus, puffing trees, blurring my focus. Through the exhaust, presidential joint with the frost. Top down, working with the semi-gloss. Nigga floss, can't imagine how much this joint costs.
Spend all my time in clubs and bars. Live this life for ours like stars. Sunset, the world is mine like Nas. I can't live without cars.
You know? In the M3 with the vanilla Roma car tree. Don't start me. Grab his rims, brown Tims. Watch how my shit swims through the streets like a fish. And niggas close their eyes and wish.
In the Navigator, three-quarter alligators, murder-filled gladiators. Pull more heat than radiators. Funk after flex, bumping out the Seven Vegas. Stashed by under the dash, holding paper.
In the E320 with these three dimes from D.C. driving through Philly, acting silly. My nigga Spunk looking willy. In the four with the system, laughing at them cats who diss me.
In the 740, I smell trees. See your aroma, put a nigga in the coma. The streets is filled with pythons and cobras. Snakes, hit the brakes, I'm jumping in the road.
Spend all my time in clubs and bars. Live this life for ours like stars. Sunset, the world is mine like Nas. I can't live without cars.
I did a couple of records like that, and so what happened was they told me to go back and give them some more radio records, and I went back and I wasn't able to really give. I didn't feel it, and I came back and I'm like, this is what I want to do. These are the records that I want to do, and they just decided at that moment, you know, that okay, we're gonna just drop it, we're gonna shelve it basically, and they shelved my project. And so a project I had been working on for over a year. It was just that easy for them to just shelve it and leave it there. And so that's when I became disenchanted with the industry. And I said, man, I'm done with this. Like maybe I can do more from the inside than I can from trying to be an artist. And so at that point in 97, roughly 97, 98, I decided to chill on the music making and try to get behind the scenes. I actually created a resume. I started trying to go on job interviews with a couple of labels, trying to get a job behind the scenes. I started pushing my production and having meetings with different labels and A&Rs with my music, my beats that I was making. And I said, you know, maybe I can leave the rapping alone and just kind of go at it from this standpoint. And that lasted for about, you know, I don't know, from 97 to probably 2000, those 3 or 4 years in there was when I was really like trying to do something else. And then I did a few singles in 2000, which kind of made me feel like maybe the fans still wanted to hear a couple raps from me. And 2001, I got convinced to just go ahead and do one more go. That's what 01 was. I said, I'm just going to, you know, I got one more album in me. Maybe I'll just go out on my own terms. And I did the exact album that I wanted to do with nobody in my ear trying to direct me as to what kind of music to make. I made the exact record I wanted to make. And that album was called Disposable Arts. And to this day, that album is my favorite album of mine because it changed the trajectory of my career at that time. It actually has extended my career for 20 years because of that one album in 2001.
What was the key track that you liked the most on that album?
There's a bunch of tracks. The first single was a song called Don't Understand featuring Greg Nice.
I don't do white music, I don't do black music. I make rap music for hip-hop kids. Y'all know what it is when I get biz with this. Flows is hard enough, you can hit your kids with this. Thugs walk through Queens Bridge with this. Italian cats drive through Bay Ridge with this. Pumping in they I-Rock, your block to my block. I make hits like Chuck Knoblock. But don't make no error or get it confused, or you find yourself getting abused, you fitting to lose. I'ma send this out to everybody, every nigga, every chick, every person up in every party. For all the shorties in the tight denim and all the hood rats getting jealous, trying to start a fight with them. And to the D's and the black Taurus, loading up the lead in the clip or the gap for us. For us.
Oh, oh. When you pump it in your BMs, you pump it like this. Pump it in your brain, pump it like this. When you pump it in your Cadillac, pump it like this. Way out in Brooklyn, pump it like this. To my people out in Queens, pump it like this. To my people in the boogie down, pump it like this. People up down, pump it like this. Pump it like this, hey, pump it like this.
I get the feeling that these cats is thinking that I might be on the verge of sinking. Either they weeded or they heavily drinking. Niggas know that I'm steadily seeking and readily weakening these so-called thug cats with a melody beacon. Let the world hear loud and clear over the airwaves. I move up on the charts like stairways. I bust raps like Trailways and Greyhound. This is for them kids who were shot on the playground. Yo, don't know why the streets are so evil. To this ghetto shit, there's no equal. Them yo people. I love rap no matter how much I say I hate it. Some support it, some cats play or hate it, but understand that I'm very thorough, and I'm not gonna stop till my name is heard in every borough, every borough, every borough.
Oh, oh.
And the B-side was a diss track called Acknowledge, and typically, you know how it is, B-side wins again. Everybody was going crazy over the diss track.
Pay homage,
yeah. One, two.
Acknowledge the rap.
And I don't know what you cats was thinking.
Pay homage, respect.
Must have been crazy. Step up on stage at CMJ, mention my name. I hear these cats, but I ain't listening. A little faint dissing, a little scratch, a little paint missing. But I still gleam and glisten, hot like a stream of pissing. I'm about to have your whole team wishing that you never got this shit started. You about to be dearly departed. You gotta be nearly retarded to let me hear my name mentioned, trying to gain attention. Now I'm running through this game lynching, and I heard a few cats trying to take shots on the low. These XFL rappers trying to fuck with a real pro. One thing, who named y'all the high and the mighty? To me, y'all just sound like a couple of high whiteys. You had to be on mad coke and ecstasy to think for a second you could stand next to me. Look, don't ever again mention my name in your freestyles, or I cut off your transmission faster than Lee Miles. And I heard your album, this must be something you knew at, cause I'd rather hear a Lil Wayne, Lil Zane duet. My cell phone stay ringing like a slap in the ear, so I hope y'all don't plan on making rap a career. Cause ever since Heb was in Vernon, I've been burning. Next year, y'all be up at Raucus, interning. And I should've let it known what your government names are, to make sure you take your personal like Gangstar, motherfuckers. Yeah. And I go for any of you other so-called rap cats. The diss track really took off at college radio in a big way, and Mix Show, and everybody was playing it. The single was doing what it was doing, but I immediately went on the road. Like, I didn't even... I was in Europe doing a 30 city tour before the album even dropped. This was the time when Napster was big. So interestingly enough, once we sent the album out to press to get reviews, the album immediately leaked. And so I show up in Europe in September of 2001, right after 9/11. I show up in Europe, and I was the only artist that actually went over there to tour. Everybody else canceled their tours. And I went over there with Punchline, Wordsworth, Strickland, DJ AV, DJ JF, and we did 26 cities in 32 days or something like that. And we were the only U.S. artists that were over there performing at that time. And to my surprise, the fans at the shows actually knew the songs that hadn't come out yet. Like, just the album was coming out till October, and they knew a bunch of the songs already. That's because of Napster and the sharing and all of that. But as much as, you know, the labels might probably feel like that was a bad thing, for me it was a good thing, because it created this word of mouth where fans were sharing this my music that hadn't dropped yet. And the popularity, it was out of here after that.
Wow. And by the way, a classic record, and that was a major label as far as getting it out there. It was Interscope distributed it, right, for J-Core. What, it's been 19 years? You just had an anniversary of that album. What is it, today or yesterday?
It was the 30th.
So congrats, man. 19 years ago, and a classic record, and the fact that it's extended your touring and your career, just amazing. You know, another great story. So thank you. So you also formed a group project, the EMC. Why don't you tell us about that group? Are you guys still making records, and kind of give us, you know, what's happening with them right now?
I formed EMC right after my album Aloha Summer came out, which came out in 04. And then right after that, like in 2005, right around 2005, because I was doing a lot of shows with the same guys who I took on that first tour in 01, Punchline, Wordsworth, Strickland. They were always traveling with me. Fans got used to kind of seeing us on stage together. And there was like rumors floating around the internet that we were going to do a group, which is not something we had even thought about. And then I had a song from that didn't make the album for Aloha Summer. It was just one, my verse and then no other verses. And we decided, yo, let's just turn this into a song with everybody on it. And so it was just my verse. So they added verses to the song. It turned into and we threw it out there. Just dropped it, released it. And everybody went crazy about, oh, this new song. You guys should really do an album. And then at that point, we decided, let's try it. Let's see if we can do an album again. We worked on the album. It came out in 2007. Our first group album, EMC, The Show. After that album dropped, we toured for about a couple of years as a group. And then I started working on solo projects again. To answer your question about new music, we've been talking about it. The next thing we dropped as a group was the EP that came out on Penalty. I don't remember the exact year. It was like 2015, I think. And then the album the following year. That album didn't go the way we felt like it should have went. And so it kind of put a bad taste in our mouth, so we kind of stepped away from the group thing for a while. But now as things are starting to heat up again and guys are kind of antsy and want to go back in and do another record, and so we're courting a few producers to see who's got the smoke, and we're going to do another one.
So tell us about your work with Polo. You did a project with him, you came back doing a project together. So how did that happen, and kind of give us that background?
So me and Marco have been cool since around 03, 04. He produced one song on my album, Along Hot Summer, a joint called Do It Man, featuring Noid.
This how we do it, man. I don't be playing, man. Straight up street, man. That's all I know, man. I'm street, kid.
Check it out, Joe. Hey, yo, they call me Big Noy. The one to smack the taste out. Your fucking mouth, I keep it gutter. That's what I be about. This what I breathe, what I eat. This why I shit it out. I'm from the streets and I'm a G and I know nothing else. Like when it's beef, I grab the tag from the fucking shelf. Stuff it in my jeans, step on the scene, ruin your health. Snitches run they mouth, that's why I do it myself. No need a codie that know me, ride me out. Testify and die, keep it gully, nigga, ride out. Before my guns come and air out your hideout. Matter of fact, say no more. You roared and grab your four. You scared to call your dog. Nigga, let's get it on. I set it off, I start throwing blows. Knock your ass out and leave you dead with a bloody nose. Bring it to your front door. Who you know, bro, it's me, a skinny nigga. But up in the streets, I'm a beast, motherfucker. Yeah, yeah, this is how we do it, man. We busting them phone lines and running from one time. Cause this is how we do it, man. My mind on my money and my money on my mind, yup. Cause this is how we do it, man. We strapped with them big gas and chasing some cootie cat. Cause this is how we do it, we man. Hold it down, we don't fuck around, niggas know our style, yup.
He actually was on a couple of the skits on the album, so we've been cool since that time. There were a couple of instances where I needed a tour DJ. He's not a DJ, but he's a producer and he's a music guy, so I said, yo, you don't have to DJ, just hit the buttons and play the joints. And so he came out as my tour DJ for a couple of runs, which was cool. Did a great job, very, very meticulous. And that just kind of, you know, being on the road together, that's what builds those relationships for you. And so we basically just gelled. We did one song for his album, which was a song that I owed him as a payback for the Noid song. And that song was called Nostalgia.
What's up, Marco? What's up, my boy? Good to venture.
People in the audience, Master Ace the name. I write rhymes and insert them inside your vein. It runs through your bloodstream, get inside your brain. Cause I first put my name up inside the train. But my control's been unprecedented, and you wrong if you thought you were the best that did it. See, I just started messing with it. I've been married to the game since 88, you just committed the entire fate of the whole Empire State's in the hands of a man that's here to inspire hate. For the state of the music, and all these other cats looking for another way to abuse it. I wake you up like a gun in the face, and just here to let you know who's like running the place. And everywhere that I perform and do a show, as long as you know.
This is for those that don't know the half.
Backtrack, turn back the page.
Let me show y'all new rappers. This how the game goes.
It was one of his singles off of his compilation album, Port Authority. When that song dropped, everybody went crazy about that song. To me, it was a cool song. I liked the song. I liked the beat. I liked the rhymes and all of that. But for some reason, the video just took off crazy. Like, and it was totally some grassroots, organic thing. Around the world, people just went crazy over that song. They loved the beat. They loved the video and the production and the rap and all of that. So that's what made fans go, you guys should do more music together. And it took a while. He produced a couple of things on EMC's album that were dope. And it just took a while for us, for our schedules to both be free at the same time. And then in 2018, we dropped the album, The Brooklyn Story, which tells Marco's story. We tell his story on that album, his migration from Toronto, Canada to Brooklyn, New York. He's been living in Brooklyn about 20 years now. But his migration to Brooklyn to try to chase this hip-hop producer dream, and that's the story we tell on that album. And the feedback for that album has been phenomenal. So it's only right that we go back and do another one. So we're already teeing up the next project.
It's great to hear. So you've been in the hip-hop business for a long time. Like, what have you learned over 30 years, you know, doing this? And what can you tell aspiring artists that are looking to get into this game and build a career?
My opinion probably won't be a popular opinion, but every time I meet young artists, sometimes I go speak at schools, junior high schools or high schools, and inevitably people ask questions at the end, and young kids, they always want to know, like, about getting in the game, and they rap and they want to get on, and how can they get on, and how can they get their stuff out there? The typical questions. I've always told them to make sure their music is not your plan A. If music is your plan A, you're going to struggle. And you're going to be the guy 35 years old still sleeping on mom's couch because this game is not promised. When you see an artist on TV, Lil Baby or somebody, and they got all this jewelry and money and they seem super successful, just know that there's another 5,000 guys just like him that didn't make it, that are still struggling, because music wasn't my plan A. Now, I know everybody can't walk the exact same path that I walked, but I wasn't chasing music, but I did music. If music hadn't worked out for me, I had a bachelor's degree in my back pocket. I was going to go into advertising and work on Fifth Avenue for one of the big ad firms. That was my real plan A. It just so happened that music worked out. So my advice is always to make sure that music is not your plan A, but your plan B, even maybe even your plan C. Find a career separate from music or something that you love to do and make sure that you're able to make a living at that. And do music when you have time to do music. If it works out and the music thing pops off for you, you'll know. All of a sudden, you start making more money from music than from your regular job. And then that's when you can make that transition to being a musician. But a lot of these young guys, man, they're full steam ahead on music. Like, maybe they were a good basketball player in high school and basketball thing didn't work out because their grades sucked. And it's like, okay, basketball didn't work out, music. They spend the next 15 years of their lives trying to do music, going to their homeboy's basement, recording songs, smoking weed, drinking beer, messing with girls. They wind up getting some girl pregnant, and now they got a baby on the way. And now the girlfriend is pressuring him, yo, you got to bring some money, and the baby needs this, the baby needs that. They wind up being forced into getting some kind of dead-end job, or maybe even an okay job, post office, whatever. But all of a sudden, their dreams are deferred, and if they had their plans in the right order, it would never have come to that. So that's always going to be my advice. Make music your plan B, maybe even your plan C.
Wow. So what are you currently working on? I know you mentioned a couple things, but what can the fans expect to hear from Master Ace?
I have the next album with Marco Polo, which I haven't even started writing it yet, but Marco has done his job. He's given me somewhere between 15 and 20 really nice pieces of music to write to. I haven't delved into it yet because I'm writing a hip-hop musical, and I'm working with this hip-hop theater company called Rhymes Over Beats, and they are helping me put together this musical. We actually had a table read in March of this year, right before the quarantine happened. We had people come in and actors come in and actually sit down and read parts so that we could hear what the story sounded like. And right from that day in March, I moved on to the music part of the story and I began to write the music. So since March, that's what I've been working on, writing these songs. Right before we got on this call, I just recorded one of the songs for one of the characters. The story of this musical is loosely based on a couple of the stories on some of my albums that I've released. It's coming out really good, man. I'm excited about it. We're thinking with the time that we've lost from the pandemic that it's definitely not going to be until late next year before we can start doing actual casting. There's 19 songs in the musical. It's not a straight musical, so there is dialogue. So I wrote the script.
Wow.
I still have some cleaning up to do on the script. There's some, you know, I haven't looked at the script since March, since the table read. So, and that was good to step away from it. So now when I step back to it with fresh eyes, I'll be able to kind of see the problems and clean it up. But sometime during the middle of next year, we might get to the point of casting. My long-term goal for this musical is that we open it in Europe. I want to open in London. I would love for the first night to be in London because I have a very strong following in the UK and it's the perfect place to set it off. Obviously, there's a lot of things that have to happen before we get to that point, but that's the dream in the back of my mind, the ideal way to release this thing.
That's great.
Love that. Love it.
So we want to thank you for joining us today. It was great and very informative.
Really great. I agree, Warren Chats.
So no thank you very much, Ace.
Really appreciate it. Stay well and healthy. And,
we'll speak.
We will speak soon, I hope. Okay, appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, Neil. Warren.
Okay.
Bye.
Later.